Cred Talks, care, research, education and debate. A forum to discuss what matters for social care. Cred Talks were launched in 2022 by Deborah Sturdy, the Chief Nurse for Adult Social Care, colleagues from universities and the National Institute of Health and Care Research. Cred Talks is a platform for staff working in social care to access research findings of direct relevance to their everyday work and to learn how to get involved in research. The Outstanding Society would like to expand the reach of the work through the creation of this podcast channel, with the aim of disseminating valuable insights about research throughout the sector. The views expressed within this episode belong to the participants and the Outstanding Society. In this episode, we look at research within home care. Zoe is joined by Dr. Richard Green, Rebecca Sharp, and Caroline Kosh.
Can I start by asking you, Dr. Green, to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about the role that you're in at the moment, please?
Sure. Thanks, Zoe. So, yes, as you said, I'm Dr. Richard Green. I work at the University of Surrey as a future fellow, currently working on a fellowship to sort of explore the possibilities that chatbots offer in kind of improving the health and well-being of older people living with frailty and multimorbility. I work a part of a research group called the Living and Dying Well Research Group, and we our kind of program of work is really to seek to improve the care that's provided to older people living with, as I said before, severe frailty and or multimorbidities, particularly with a focus on older people living in the community. So that's the kind of my and our kind of focus in that work.
Fantastic. Thank you. And Becky.
Yeah, hi. So I'm Becky Sharp. I work for the Kent, Surrey, Sussex Academic Health Science Network. And that's part of a 15-strong network across England, established by NHS England to support discovery and the spread of innovation in health and care. We also support our regional applied research collaboration. So thinking about the implementation of research to support evidence-based practice, with social care and social work being a core theme, and recognising the importance of social care provision in our region. My specific focus has been very much on transformation and innovation in social care and specifically in home care, and how we can improve the outcomes of those living in our Kent, Surrey, Sussex region, but also wider as well.
Fantastic. Thanks, Becky. And Caroline.
Hi, I'm Caroline Kosh. I'm Managing Director for Clifton Home Care, and we're a home care company based in Lytham St Anne's on the Fylde Coast here in Lancashire, and I'm a non-exec director at the Outstanding Society.
Fantastic, fantastic panel. Can I come back to you first of all, please, Becky? Can you share some personal reflections or experiences concerning delivery of home care?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think for the work that I've been doing, obviously, we're very cognizant of an aging population. The population, aging population is growing faster in our region than the national average. We've got a higher proportion of people living with dementia, you know, and people are living longer, but not necessarily in good health. And we've also seen shifts in family caring availabilities and increasing burnout of family and friend carers who are picking up more and more. So people's needs are increasing. And of course, you know, we can't ignore the fact that a lot of people want to stay in their own homes and receive care and support in that place as well. And the other thing that really I think we have been sort of focusing on is around some of the sort of inequalities that persist. It's certainly in some of our coastal areas, and also when you consider that a large proportion of care is self-funded, you know, the cost of living crisis will probably also be having an impact on people as well.
Yeah.
Thanks, Becky. And Caroline, as a provider, what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with the cost of living crisis having an effect. We have seen some clients reduce their care and support, the hours that are provided, and cut back where possible. So I think that's definitely having an impact. And we, you know, we're based on the Fylde Coast, so our area across Lytham and St Anne's is quite heavily populated with older people. I know I looked at our stats for Fylde, and our sort of over 65s in 21 was 23.8% versus a national average of 20.1. So, and that's ever increasing. And again, you know, we care for a lot of people living at home with early to advanced stage of dementia. So I do agree with both, all of that, that Becky's just said.
Fantastic. And Richard, if I can come to you, you've said before that social care is an invisible workforce, but they're receiving minimal attention. Can you expand on that for me, please?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think sort of building on what Becky and Caroline have sort of been speaking about, Becky is based in the same sort of geographic region and supports the work that we do in our research group. And reflecting on work I've been doing for the PALAP study, led by Professor Caroline Nicholson, where for the last, I suppose, 8 months or so, we've been basically interviewing patients and unpaid family carers for older people living with severe frailty across three sites in England. So based in Sussex, really rural areas in Northumberland, and also in Bradford as well, kind of urban site and also quite socioeconomically deprived as well. So got kind of a variety of pictures. And I kind of imagined, as Caroline was speaking, that there might be some parallels between the Northumberland side, particularly this really rural area, that there's so much reliance on unpaid family carers, particularly because you just don't have the staff available. Caring agencies have just said, like, we can't get someone out there, I'm sorry, you're going to have to. And so, you know, district nurses and teams like that are spending a lot of their time just trying to get care in place for people. So there's this additional strain as well for areas that might not get that level of support. I realise I'm waffling, apologies, but I just wanted to sort of come back, particularly to the Sussex region. It's similar sort of to what Becky described in terms of that changing demographic and a higher proportion of older people. That some of the interviews I've been doing, there's just such a high demand for care in that area, a particularly high proportion of older people in that area. And the paid social care that can be provided is so minimal and so expensive. You know, it's half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the evening, come in, get you out of bed, put you back into bed kind of thing. It's just, you know, we're talking about good experiences, bad experiences. You know, it's not always that finely graded, I suppose, but it's what can be done for available cost. And it's quite a depressing picture, but I think there's such potential for doing more just with more time. And it's how we do that, I think, which hopefully we'll come on to discuss a bit more.
Absolutely. And if I could stay with you there for a minute, what are the particular challenges around research within social care that you might have already come across or you envisage for the future?
Absolutely. I think I think there are a number of challenges. I've not previously worked in social care. I'm a social researcher by background, but so I can't really speak for what it's like for people within social care who might want to do research. But I have a master's student, for instance, who's just been doing a qualitative study. She works in social care. She's been trying to get staff involved in her project within some care homes, and she's just struggled so much to get buy-in from managers, buy-in from other staff. And I know you would still struggle in a healthcare setting to do that. Everyone's busy, completely understand that. But I do wonder if there is the same level of recognition in social care settings for the value and importance of the research. And that comes back to what is, as you alluded before, Zoe, this invisible workforce. There isn't that recognition. So I think there is a challenge about how we get funders and how we get that whole research infrastructure to better recognize the value of this research, but also what is needed to make this research, to allow this research to be done well, better training, better valuing of research roles in social care settings. I know we have a kind of clinical academic research infrastructure in health. Do we have the same in social care? Honestly, I do not know if we do. So if we do, then it's great. But I think it's there's a lot of work, I think, that needs to be done in that area, I suppose, as a kind of what I see would be some of the sort of starting points for starting to build the profile of this work.
I think so. And I think it's really difficult to promote research within social care. The NHS is very much research data based, and we need to improve that within our sector. Caroline, why do you think there are barriers from a domiciliary point of view, but in the whole of social care?
I think there's various reasons for the barriers, Zoe. Nationally, we've all seen that, well, the recruitment and retention challenge, haven't we, in social care? So if you are understaffed as a provider, as an organisation, if you're not retaining your good staff, if you're upskilling your staff and then they're moving on to other organisations or the NHS, you're losing an awful lot of experience and knowledge and staff who are invested in a sector. We're quite lucky in terms of that. And I do see the engagement that we get from our staff team because of, like you said, Richard, the good training that we invest in them. And the time that we take to explain the need for things like research in social care, because let's face it, I have a health hat as well as social care. It's been in and around health for a long time, but it's not been in and around social care that we all know of and talk of for very long at all. So trying to get our staff team on board with that, we've slowly integrated that, and we are doing a little bit of research and investing some of our time in that. I think I think it was really interesting, Richard, you said about coastal areas and the staff shortages around there. I know I had a conversation with a provider in Cornwall, and often people go to reside in these coastal resorts, don't they, when they're older, when they want to have a better standard of living, when they're suffering with multiple comorbidities, they want cleaner air, and et cetera, et cetera. And I know the provider in Cornwall was especially struggling with recruitment and retention, and in an area that was not affordable in terms of accommodation for social care staff. So that was having a whole range of issues. And I know really all I've said about is recruitment and retention. But I think going back to another thing you said, Richard, it's about myth busting. You know, home care, which we're talking about specifically today, used to be a caring service where you would go and do somebody's shopping once a week, go and pop in and have a cup of tea with somebody because they were feeling a bit lonely and isolated. And look at the difference now. You know, 10 years has made a vast difference. We're caring for people at home with advanced dementia who years ago would have moved into residential. We're caring for people with motor neurone disease, with Huntington's disease, with all manner of comorbidities that, with the right care and support, we can enable people to continue living at home if that's their desire to do so. But the nature of what we do has completely changed, and we need the right recognition for that, for our staff teams to get them invested. And it comes back to the commissioning side of things, doesn't it, in the recognition for our workforce.
Can I just come in there as well, Zoe, in terms of, you know, how we also support the home care in terms of raising that profile and also supporting that research infrastructure? So I think as an applied research collaboration, our work over the last 3 years has definitely shown us that research capacity in the area needs to grow. We've mentioned before, or it's been mentioned before, about the Enrich work that's gone on with the Clinical Research Network. So that's enabling research in care homes. But also as well, it's whether we need to sort of try and support and develop something similar for the home care sector, because, you know, I don't think it's right that you just sort of lift and shift something that works in a care home and automatically assume that that's what will support the home care sector. And I think we know that from the work that we did during the pandemic. So we facilitate a thriving, what we call a community of experience in the region. And it started off with just a few individuals following some work we were doing to support the home care sector in responding to COVID. And we know that their experience was not great. And they felt, and I think this comes back to actually understanding the role of the home care worker in terms of what their role actually entails, you know, that they have to risk assess every single day. They know the client probably better than anybody. So they see all those soft signs of deterioration. You know, they've got a limited amount of time to go in there and be, you know, provide nutritious food, to do personal care, to be a pharmacist, to look at, you know, they have to do so much. And I just don't think that's well understood. And that certainly came out in the research that we did during COVID. And I think, you know, working in somebody's own home is very different to a clinical setting. You can't ignore that either. So just thinking about infection prevention and infection control. But as a result of the work that we did, it really engaged our home care sector in understanding the value of research, because they had a voice and they could share their experiences. So we've developed this community experience. We've got over 200 people, 250 people who've joined that. And it's about sort of developing a sort of a space where we can sort of share knowledge, but also ensure that we're understanding the challenges that the sector have, so that we do the research that is needed for that sector, and build that sort of infrastructure that gives organisations and their staff and also their clients the confidence, I guess, the time and resources and reimbursement to participate. So I'm really excited about the future, I think, for home care in relation to research, because I guess what I would ask, though, is that we need to be really mindful that we do not overwhelm the sector, because I think they're already overwhelmed. And so, you know, coming back to having a good infrastructure in place, I think would really help that. So not only help the providers and the people they care for and their staff to get involved, but also for researchers and academics to sort of be sympathetic to the work and the language and the challenges that they face.
I think that's a really valid point. And I think maybe we need to look at using a different language as well. And I think the point that you said about you want to answer questions that clients might have, that team members might have. And it's about people, providers coming to you with problems to say, actually, we need an answer for this. So then you're working on the research project together. And I think that collaboration would really help. How would you see that working, Caroline, as a provider with your clients, with your team members?
Well, this is what we're currently working on, Zoe. So we have recently written out, so we write regular communications to clients and families, and we've included in that this time research, and we are, because going back to a point you made, Becky, a lot of the research is residential home focused, as a lot of social care is. It was primarily residential with a home care slant to it later. But we are taking every opportunity that comes our way, and we're having conversations about different research projects, and there's a measure in the impact of loneliness, which is great for home care. And we're taking that on, and that's about a 12-month study, I think it is. So we have written to our clients. We're going to include information in our newsletters for staff and clients. And then we're going to start speaking to our staff teams about this over the summertime with different bits and pieces in terms of training. So I think it's just getting that communication out there that this is a good thing to get involved with. And working with our local university, that's what we're doing on another project that's very research focused, sort of validating a policy that we've developed, and our staff have again bought into that because they see the benefit of this policy, and they I think would feel quite proud if this policy was validated.
I think that's really important. The point you said as well is one of the feedback that we get is that when staff organizations get involved in research, they don't always see the outcomes. So, you know, and that's another really important, you know, it's like, you know, why do we get involved if we then don't see the benefit or the outcome? So I love the fact that you're really involved, you know, from the ground, and your staff are getting involved, and then as being, you know, part of the project, you will see the benefits. And, you know, it's a policy by the sounds of it that you developed yourself in-house as well.
Yeah, that's right, Becky. Yeah, looking at falls and falls management. So, you know, particularly important for home care when you've got staff alone working. So, yeah.
I'd be interested to hear more about that in terms of, you know, if that works in your organisation, how do you then spread that good practice?
Well, that will be through the research that's being done with the University of Central Lancashire. We've got an innovation validation assessment being conducted on that policy as we speak, potentially to move on to a real world validation, and then moving on from that to potentially cascading that further for others to use. Because if we use it, and we have done for 10 years successfully, like you say, it could be shared for other providers to use.
I think that's such a key point. I think there are pockets of excellence across the sector, and how do you model that and move it into another sector? And it's not just about, you know, the research. It's about how you begin asking the questions, how you engage with people using the services, how you engage with team members. Have you got any thoughts on that, Richard?
Yeah, I do. I'm really sort of taken by both what Becky said about this, the community of experience kind of model, which I have been to some of those meetings, and I think it's a really it's a really useful space, because I think particularly, I don't know if this is true, but what I would imagine is that home care providers are perhaps more likely to rise and fall more quickly and more changeably than a care home. That might not be true, but I guess care homes are quite fixed infrastructure, and I suppose funding is an issue these days, but I guess home care businesses can get created and maybe fall out of business more rapidly. I'm not sure, but I think having a space to engage with within your kind of region with home care, and really, as well as what Caroline described with the model they're taking, it's we as an organization, or we as a collective group with an interest in home care, are basically generating those questions and ideas themselves. Which, you know, I think that's the way to do it. If you want the buy-in, then find an issue that is important to your staff and important to locally. I think the challenge that researchers often have is, you know, particularly in a kind of health and social care research model, patient and public involvement and engagement is a big thing. It's very important. It's a big buzzword. But researchers often think, I want to do this, and their ideas come first, and the PPI, or the kind of people involved in research, don't always take the precedence they should. But actually, I really think that needs to shift, and we really need to do more of let the organizations, let the people tell you what is a concern to them and work with that. I think particularly in a more constrained financial kind of funding system that we're in at the moment, lots of voluntary organizations are saying, sorry, we don't have the funding, we don't have the capacity to support you with your research at the moment. There is, you know, people are pulling back from what they're able to give in terms of their time. As a result, I think researchers will have to really adapt themselves and say, what does this organization need, and let them lead it. So I think there is something there. In terms of that kind of impact, that wider kind of cascading, it's really difficult. How do you get other people to take on your ideas in a bigger scale? It's certainly a lot of what guides the work that we're doing with the Living and Dying Well research group. And I think there is something about that kind of evaluation approach, trying to take those kind of core components or principles from what you're doing and think about how can this translate to other settings. I think it's that, from what I'm taking from what Caroline's been saying, is that it's a long-term approach that you're taking. It's you know, that has become a part of your culture over time. And I think the more that you do that, the stronger you're building that evidence base through a series of projects. And then that evaluation, working with university partners, can really help that to take off.
I think just to add to that, Richard, sorry, Zoe, but yeah, it is a longer term approach, and it's living by your values, isn't it? We can all say as an organisation we've got values, but do you truly embed them? And that learning development for us has always been a real passion, and research sits absolutely under that. You know, how can we better improve? One of the comments we said at the start was, okay, people may be living longer, but are they living better quality of lives? And potentially not. So how can this benefit our service users, our clients, and our staff teams as well? And that's what we try to approach it from as well, is what are the benefits to this?
I think that's really interesting about the quality of life stuff as well, Caroline. You know, because I think often research, even within social care, they look for a sort of health health benefits. So, you know, does it delay admission to hospital or prevent hospital admission? And actually, it is things like the quality of life studies that are really important. And, you know, just thinking about some work that we're doing around food and drink needs. So being led by Dr. Stacey Rand at the University of Kent, where she's looking at, you know, much more around the sort of quality of life and the sort of cultural aspects of food and drink for people living in their own homes, as opposed to nutrition and hydration, which are important. Of course they are. But, you know, it's the wider things. And we've got another project as well, just thinking about different, you know, one size doesn't fit all. So sort of thinking about how, you know, inclusive practice and how cultures, whether that's with food and drink, how you include that, you know, which obviously has an impact on somebody's quality of life if they're being provided with the food that they like and, you know, is part of their culture. Or maybe the LGBTQ plus community and sort of making sure that the practice is inclusive, you know, for LGBTQ plus. So there's lots of pockets of work going on that are looking at some of these challenges and sort of thinking about people's quality of life. It's so important.
Coming back to somebody's point about researchers leading, we're working on a big project at the moment, and it's led by social care for social care, but it's three organizations coming together. So you've got providers, you've got academia, and you've got policymakers. And if the three organizations in whichever your area you're working in come together to lead on the research, that is going to make a huge difference. It's such an amazing model. If I could ask the three of you, what are the positives or what are the possible ways that we can move forward from here? What would that be? If I can come to you first, please, Caroline.
Involve your staff teams. I think that's critical in everything we do. And we're seeing that in terms of the shift for CQC inspections. And it's very much involving your staff teams in everything. I truly believe that if staff teams understand the reasons for things, you get a far better buy-in and better compliance, if you want to use that word, better engagement. I think we need to do more about educating our clients, our service users, about the potential benefits for this and their family members as well, because they are a great influence and a great source. And they may themselves be involved in research roles, etc. So we could draw on their expertise. So I think involve the people that you're serving. But I think going back to a point you made, Richard, it's trying to turn a bit like the OS, but trying to turn challenges and negatives and issues into a positive. So what are as a provider, as an organisation, what are your challenges? And what can we do about this? What area do we need to work on? How could research help us improve this? And something like you said about before with nutritious meals, Becky, you know, in home care, that's quite challenging when you've got a 30-minute visit and 20-minute contact time. So that's a challenge and an issue. We've done bits around that, but what can you do as a provider to make that better?
Thanks, Caroline. And you mentioned the CQC. Obviously, the quality statements cover research under well-led as well. So I think that's quite crucial. Could I come across to you, Becky, please, for your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think from what I understand, you know, there is a real paucity of evidence around home care and big gaps in the literature. So there's plenty of opportunity for really great research. And it comes back to Caroline's point and Richard's as well, in terms of making sure that we do the right research and you know, it's research that's needed by the organisations, the people working for them and the people receiving care. I think there's also a need for sort of thinking about this ongoing sustainable home care provision as well, and a need to increase perhaps the numbers of people working in social care and make it a really good career choice. So I think there's some work to be done around that and sort of career progression opportunities and corresponding salary and benefits between those working in the NHS and those working in social care. And a lot of that research evidence does already exist. And I think there is something that we can do to sort of look at, whilst I said there is lots of gaps in the literature, there is also already literature out there that actually could answer some of the questions that we have. So I think for me, that's where there's some positives, and it's great to have a focus now on home care in that.
Absolutely. And you just mentioned something there that I wanted to touch on. So we're trying to move away from the term staff or teams. We're trying to use social care professionals. And I think that that would raise the bar for the sector as well.
Indeed. Yeah.
Could I come across to you, Richard, for your final comments, please?
So I absolutely agree about social care professionals. That's what they are. And, you know, I think someone previously just described, maybe it was Becky, the, you know, when you go into someone's home, you're taking on a lot of roles. You're the pharmacist, you're the meal preparer, you're the cleaner, or what you're becoming, taking on a lot of work, and it's not work that we value as a society. And while they are professionals, you know, domiciliary carers, you know, I think you could get paid more on an hourly rate working in an Amazon warehouse or something like this. It's you know, that parity between NHS and social care, or health and social care, like roles and responsibilities and pay, are really, really important. But we can't solve that, so let me move on. I think something that Caroline picked up on is sort of talking about education. It really is this, I think it's in a kind of, I'm not sure if it's just for advanced clinical practitioners, but there are these kind of pillars of there's a kind of pillars model, but I think pretty sure that research and education sit within those. And I think that they're so twinned in a way that we haven't necessarily discussed so much here. But, you know, the research adds to the practice that's been done. It's a way of upskilling and training staff as well. And if you can kind of build that into a research design, you know, that for one of the studies we had, you know, there's money embedded to support training for using the clinical frailty scale, for example. Like, if you're offering something back, that really adds to research. I think, again, coming back to kind of the way that Caroline was describing the working relationship that they, you know, the work they've been doing, the working relationship with the University of Central Lancashire, it's about long-term relationships. I think one of the challenges with the academic research culture is that you get contracts and they are fixed for an amount of time. You're expected to do a lot of stuff in that amount of time. And often it's that, you know, giving back afterwards, what have we done, that gets lost out and that doesn't get the work it deserves. And I think we can't necessarily change that culture, but if we try and build those relationships and sustain them and look for ways to continue working with organizations going forward, it really supports a case of impact. It really is saying, look, I'm investing in this group of people. So I think that kind of model can really help to counter some of the actual infrastructure challenges. So I think that is one that's working quite well for our research team, and that's something we want to take forward and that I would recommend. And I think that's the end of my waffling. Yeah.
Can I just say there as well, though, but you know, if we get it right, it's a really exciting space, and ultimately what we're saying here is it's going to lead to improved outcomes for you know, people receiving care and people working in care. You know, it's a win-win, isn't it, really?
Zoe, can I just add, sorry, two groups of people. I'm going to keep with people, okay? So we need to involve people, whether that be our teams, whether that be our clients, our service users, our families, but also, sorry, two critical ones for me are students. So student placements, you know, your T-level, your BTEC placements, your university placements. We really do embrace these the opportunity to work with our students. And these can be a range from digital placements to health placements, but also your community teams as well, because we have a really strong relationship with our community teams. And again, going back to something you said, Richard, about involving these community teams, they will help solve some of your issues sometimes. And I think that's really integral, is getting that really good relationship, so that you know you can bounce ideas off each other, and you can pick the phone up, and you can email, and you can get involved. So sorry, just to add, more people.
No, that's fantastic. And I'd like to say a huge thank you to you all for this afternoon. Some really valuable insights into research within the home care sector. Thank you.